The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Wednesday in what I think is the longest week on record. You know, some weeks seem to just fly by. This one is dragging on at a glacial pace. And it's because Tuesday is, I was going to say Election Day, but that's sort of an anachronism now. There is no more Election Day. It's Election Days, and that's the end of the Election Days. And that's one of the subjects we're going to talk to Lisa Graves about. Lisa Graves, who has been on this program many times in the past. Lisa, you hopefully know, is a former Deputy Assistant Attorney General under in the Clinton administration. She was a chief counsel for nominations in the Senate Judiciary Committee. She knows her shit when it comes to the law, the courts, the Senate, and how these things work. And so I'm thrilled that Lisa is going to join us today, because what I wanted to do today is address some of the gaslighting that's happening to us by this president, by this resident of the Oval Office, who hopefully will be moving out in about 80 some odd days. In fact, facts are what I want to get to today, because there's misinformation, lies being spewed by everybody in this administration, from Donald Trump on down. Today we learned the identity of Anonymous. Remember Anonymous, who, like, the first year Trump was in office, wrote an op-ed anonymously in the New York Times. They assured us he was a bigwig. He then wrote a book anonymously and said that he would expose himself. We didn't know that it was a he until now, before Election Day. Well, we're 6 days out, so thanks a whole lot. The guy's name, well, he's somebody that we've known of, Miles Taylor. Miles Taylor is the former deputy secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, who left last year and is now a CNN contributor. And guess what? You know, while he was warning us in print about all the horrible things the Trump administration was doing, he was complicit. Because as deputy secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, he was there when the child separations were happening. He didn't stop it. He didn't sound the alarm. He just hid behind Anonymous and capitalized on it. Too little, too late. You know what? I have a song for him, I believe. Again, Miles Taylor, everybody feel free to join in and sing along. All right. Somebody else that we want to say fuck you to is Donald Trump, but we do that every single day. But by now, I'm sure you've heard about what happened last night. So Donald Trump did something like 3 rallies yesterday, right? And he ended the night in Omaha, somewhere in Middle America. Sorry, song line. Omaha, Nebraska. So he has this big rally. There's a lot of people there, all crammed together, very few masks, except for the people sitting behind him in camera shot. Because, you know, they lie about everything. And then after the thing ended, Trump got back on Air Force One and left. And there were dozens to hundreds of rally goers who were abandoned, who were stuck there, who were stranded by the road, because there were supposed to be shuttle buses running back and forth between the site of the rally and the parking lot where all the cars were, which was something like 3.5 miles away. While these people waited and waited and waiting, and it was freezing cold, so much to the point where ambulances were called, 30 people were treated, I believe 30, for hypothermia. 9 were rushed to the emergency room. And Donald Trump doesn't give a shit. So this is typical. This is how they treat people. You know, Hogan Gidley, his campaign spokesperson, was asked, I think it was on CNN today, by Allison Camerota this morning, about, aren't you a little nervous? I mean, he's going to Utah, talking about Mike Pence. He's going to be in Utah, which is it's a pandemic. Things are really bad. And Hogan Gidley's response was, oh, Mike Pence has the finest doctors in the world with him. Not an ounce of concern about all the people who are opening themselves up to being infected. Because they don't give a shit about you. They do not care about you. Channeling George Carlin here. There's a video surfaced today. Let me play it for you. It's by a woman named Blair Erskine, who it appears was there in Nebraska last night. Were you there, Blair? Tell us all about it.
I'm having a great time. I can't feel my body, but I don't really need my body. This is about Trump's body. I think this whole thing's been blown way out of proportion, you know? Like, yeah, they didn't let us drive our cars here. But it's because they said, you know, our cars are poor and that doesn't look good on TV. You know, you're a TV person. You know that.
Yeah, right.
I think he did this to teach us a lesson.
Oh,
I really do.
Yeah.
What was that lesson?
Yeah.
Well, that's not really for me to know. And that's actually pretty nasty of you to ask. Democrats want to have their bus rides and have their bus rides back, too. This isn't the Polar Express. Tom Hanks isn't in charge of this thing. He's in Greece being a pedophile. No, I don't feel like he abandoned us. No. Listen, I would walk 750 miles in below zero temperatures, nip nude, just to hear him speak. Maybe that's not appropriate to say, but yes, I've seen some elderly people passed out and unresponsive. But to be honest, the only reason there's so many of those people is because the media keeps counting them. And so if people like you guys weren't counting the old people that were on the ground, there wouldn't be as many.
Ah, thank you. Her name is Blair Erskine. And you know what? I'm watching the comments in the YouTube chat room, and there are things like Trump idiot. Saw her last night on Twitter. She's an idiot and a bitch to boot. Totally brainwashed. She's a comedian. That's not real. Here, let me play you another one of Blair Erskine explaining the Georgia elections. Okay, here we go. Take it away, Blair.
If you live in Georgia, you might have noticed our Senate election this year is very confusing. You might think that John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock are running against each other. That's not true. John Ossoff is running against Senator David Perdue, who is the incumbent. Then we have a special election. And by special, I mean, it's very confusing. But it seems as if this election is going to come down between Raphael Warnock and Kelly Loeffler. In 2019, Senator Johnny Isaacson resigned, leaving his Senate seat open. Governor Brian Kemp appointed Kelly Loeffler. You might be asking yourself, why did Brian Kemp appoint Kelly Loeffler? She has no experience. That's a great question, and I have an answer for you. Money. The thing is, when you have a special election, anyone can run. There's no primary election before the special election. Everyone can just kind of toss their names into the hat. And so in order to win a special election, people have to know your name. While Brian Kemp might not seem like the brightest crayon in the Ku Klux Crayola box, he knew he had to appoint a candidate who could buy the recognition needed to win the special election.
Yes.
Enter Kelly Loeffler. Because just like Attila the Hun, she married rich.
Oh, she did.
You really learn a lot about candidates during elections, like who they are, what they stand for, if they even know who Attila the Hun was. She doesn't know. Listen, it's important for John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock to win their Senate seats.
Yes, it is.
Because we have a real chance of flipping the U.S. Senate blue this year.
We do.
Why do we want to flip it blue? Two words for you. Mitch McConnell.
Mm.
Mitch McConnell and that folds of dishonor neck that he has. What secrets are in those folds? We may never know. Anyway, if Democrats get control of the Senate, we can finally start passing bills. Bills that would provide a stimulus package for coronavirus relief. Bills that would ensure reproductive rights for women. Bills that would work to end voter suppression. So to summarize, when you're at the polls or when you're filling out your ballot at home, vote for John Ossoff and vote for Raphael Warnock. I'll leave links below so you can donate to both of their campaigns. Let's flip the U.S. Senate blue.
Yes. So that, again, that's the real Blair Erskine. She does these videos where she plays ditzy right-wing nut jobs. And so many of you were taken in by her. It's satire. It's humor. It's funny. The reason it rang so true is because when she's doing her, you know, right-wing nut job thing, she sounds just like those right-wing nut jobs. It's comedy. Check her out, her YouTube channel. She's very, very funny. All right. As I said, we got a busy show for you today. I wanted to address facts. I wanted to counter the gaslighting from this administration on everything from COVID to, obviously, the Supreme Court. So I got to tell you, our first guest today is somebody that I, quote, discovered on Twitter. I didn't discover him at all. He is a scientist. He is a doctor. He's an, he's an epidemiologist and a health economist and a senior fellow at the Federation of American Scientists in Washington, D.C., and chief health economist for Microclinic International. And it was in January of this year that he was recognized in the media as one of the very first to alert the public on the pandemic risk of COVID-19. He was previously a faculty and researcher at Harvard Medical School. He was there from 2004 to 2020. And I'm so excited that Dr. Eric Feigl-Ding is here. You know him on Twitter as Dr. Eric Ding. All right, doctor, take it away. First, I want to thank you for the great information that you share and urge everyone to follow your Twitter account. I will post the info on my blog as well as it's right up here on the screen as well. Because you're giving out great information at a time when there's a lot of bad information coming and coming from the White House. So let's start there. Donald Trump keeps saying that we've rounded the curve on the coronavirus. In fact, just yesterday, the Trump administration released this report declaring victory. They have a list of their from the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy listing what it claims are the scientific and technological accomplishments during Trump's term. And the list includes ending the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, you're an actual epidemiologist, a scientist. What do you say to that?
I think it's ludicrous. If anything, you know, the actual report didn't say or tout that, but their press released it, which again just shows that they're all about smoke and mirrors and deceiving the members of the press and the lay public. I think it's just ludicrous because, look, we've had Trump not only getting infected, now there's an outbreak in Pence's office, and the U.S. has set a record 500,000 new cases recorded in a single week. That has never been done before. And we're very close to 9 million cases. And all of this could have very much been prevented. And we're not slowing it down. If anything, we're in the middle of our third peak. Some people say third wave. So it's only going to get worse.
Yeah. Now, what do you say, looking at what's happening in Europe, they were doing very well. They had some strict restrictions in the spring that helped. I mean, Italy, for example, was completely shut down. They had such a massive outbreak, and it seemed like they had flattened the curve, and they were doing better. And now, all of a sudden, the fall resurgence of it, what we were told was going to happen, is happening, and it seems like it's even worse over there. What happened there?
I think they got very much complacent. Mm-hmm. They had done their lockdowns early many times, and they were very careful with the quarantine rules if you travel between countries. But, you know, with the summer holidays and the massive amount of travel, it's getting worse. And as the temperature gets colder, indoor dining starts predominating more compared to summer outdoor dining. And this is building up to a perfect storm in which schools are reopening, people are coming back from their summer travels, indoor dining, and being people being complacent and not wearing masks because they thought they had it behind them. But it clearly shows, even if you did a great job early on, it can easily come back to bite you.
Now, Dr. Ding, you started talking about the dangers inherent in this new novel coronavirus back in January. We learned that Donald Trump was informed about the dangers, certainly by the beginning of February. He didn't share that with us. But we're now learning new things. In fact, you posted a story yesterday from the New York Times that says that some survivors of COVID-19 carry signs that their immune system turns on the body itself. The system is attacking itself rather than the virus. Mm-hmm. Is this a new development?
Well, it's a semi-new revelation that it's more serious than we thought. Again, this is kind of like the motto with this virus. You think one thing, but it's actually much worse. And we know that, like, for example, the cytokine storms before, when people really, really start suffering, all that is a form of your body attacking itself. But with the antibodies, some of the antibodies attacking your own body, that's almost akin to an autoimmune disorder like rheumatoid or lupus. And so that one became much more, I guess, like cognizant just recently that this could be another form of long COVID in which, like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, you could have it for much, much longer and your body attacks yourself. So this is why we have to take precautions and we can't just focus on death. And deaths are increasing and they're not a hoax and they're not being miscoded by doctors in some fraudulent, you know, conspiracy theory. It is very real, and long-term illness and debilitating illnesses from brain fog to brain fatigue to many other things are very real, even if you do survive. So I think it's, again, one of those things where you have to take precautions. You have to assume the worst. And right now, all these assume the worst scenarios are somewhat coming true. And that's why we have to stop the epidemic, not just say, oh, let it spread and, you know, let it spread as long as we have hospital beds free, which is totally irresponsible.
Right. And in many places, we don't any longer have hospital beds free. I think I saw something this morning that in Wisconsin.
Yeah, many places are building field hospitals in Texas, in Wisconsin, and in many other places.
And it's interesting because a lot of these places are places where Donald Trump has been holding these rallies. For instance, last night, I think he did three rallies yesterday. He ended the night in Nebraska where it's cold. Now, he thinks he's doing something right by holding these rallies outside. But the way the people are packed in next to each other, obviously, it I think, probably erases any advantage doing it outside would offer.
Yeah, I think outside is definitely better than inside. But the problem is outside with such high density of people. And we've seen photos of his rallies. They're always high density of people. And 8 out of 10 times, people are not wearing masks. It's altogether very, very dangerous situation because you have to both have good ventilation as well as distance. You can't have just one and not the other. Just like the White House had testing, but then once they had their testing, they didn't wear their masks, which allows asymptomatic carriers to get through easily. So I think all these rallies, we know that many of them have been tied to the coronavirus pandemic and to his rallies in Minnesota. So altogether, it's just so dangerous that he continues to have these rallies and endangers the public. And yet right now he still wants to go to Wisconsin.
It's amazing.
In the middle of Wisconsin having one of the worst epidemics in the country.
Right. And to show how little regard he has for the health of his followers, last night, it's astounding. He left the Nebraska in Air Force One, and thousands of these people were stranded at the site of the rally where I guess buses brought them from where they parked to where the rally was held. It was sub-freezing temperatures, and some reports, even he said it was about 10 degrees with the wind chill. They were left standing out there for hours, many of them elderly people. We understand 30 were treated for hypothermia, 9 were rushed to the ER in ambulances. This is neglect, and according to, you know, staffers, their only concern seems to be for the president and the vice president, and they don't seem to care that they're putting all these citizens at risk.
Yeah, it's in certain ways, last night was kind of like a microcosm. You know, he's there for the great flashy show, but then the one moment he leaves, he doesn't worry, he doesn't care about the rest of the logistics of how people are to survive and get back to their cars. And, you know, this actually is reminiscent. This has happened before in his previous campaigns in which, or one of his previous events in which, he actually did not pay for the bus company previously. So it's, again, last night was unfortunate, but it's just so telling. This is such a classic Trump campaign thing, where they do it for the show and tell. They put out a fake press release touting their scientific success of the coronavirus pandemic, even though that's not true. And even though that's not actually what the actual report says. But it's all flashing mirrors right now, smoke and mirrors. And that's what's so worrying. American lives are at stake. The world's, you know, economic and, you know, public health survival is at stake. And yet he's just laissez-faire, herd immunity, infect everyone. And it's just so irresponsible.
Has this administration done anything right in this fight in the last 8 months?
Well, right is a relative term.
Right,
you know,
okay.
They eventually got testing up, but testing is not just about, well, you know, how much you do, but also when you did it. And South Korea had their testing up very early, mm-hmm. And hence they stopped it early. You know, testing eventually now is available. I think the vaccines are going well, but again, the vaccines is not really due to the administration. It's just a pure matter of scientific funding. You fund the science and the vaccine trials will arrive. I'm not sure, to be honest. Have they done anything perfectly? I don't think so.
No.
Have they done some things somehow half-assed and gotten through it? Yes, like the testing now, we're at over a million tests a day. But again, too little, too late sometimes is right. The problem.
Exactly. And his line that he's still pushing at these rallies, that the reason our number of infections are up, the number of cases is rising, is because we're doing so much testing.
Yeah. Well, you can't lie that hospital beds are full, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You can't make up those kind of things,
nope.
Except his, of course, his claim by some of his surrogates that, you know, all of these hospitals and hospital admissions are just doctors, you know, trying to increase their profits,
oh,
which
God.
Is the most ludicrous thing that the American Medical Association had to come out and put and stamp that conspiracy theory out. But that just shows you how sad the state is when American Medical Association has a fact-checked administration.
It is stunning, that just the dishonesty. Do you have faith that a Biden administration will be able to turn things around? I mean, what's it going to take to turn the tide around?
First of all, turning around a Titanic when you've already hit
the iceberg.
Several icebergs, yeah. is going to take a while,
yeah.
right?
Yep.
You know, you're trying to turn a big ship and turn around a big ship in terms of this pandemic's trajectory. I will say it will be possible. It will take time. Vaccines will eventually help. But until then, national mask mandate, which Biden administration has been pushing, will be really helpful.
Uh-huh.
I think we finally need to get our Defense Production Act for PPEs, like medical grade masks or higher, like N95s. Mass produced instead of burgers and sausages
and yeah.
in for Defense Production Act of meat packing factories. Like, what is that? I think,
definitely.
You know, with all these mask mandates and, you know, get more PPEs and many other things like funding schools and public buildings with better ventilation that many other countries have done, like in Germany, which is giving $500 million, 100,000 100,000 euros to each school and public building to renovate their ventilation system. If we had that for every school, that would be incredible. But again, that will take an act of Congress as well as a lot of activism in order to to make sure we can pass those kind of legislations.
Right. If the money is made available, and that's a big if, because there's still going to be a lot of Republicans in the Senate who want nothing to do with helping the citizens of this country get through this crisis. But if they are, how long do you think it'll be before we get back to some semblance of normalcy?
Well, I think there will be a motivation to get this all under control. And, you know, especially if Democrats control Congress, the House and the Senate and the White House, then we'll really be able to roll our sleeves up and do what we want to do and do it quickly. But I think it will still take time because, you know, Biden administration doesn't take off until January. That's still quite a ways away.
Yeah. You know, we got like 78 days of a lame duck session when they can do all kinds of damage.
It'll take quite a while to ramp up because not everyone will be hired from day one. So but I think we're definitely in this, stuck in this through the spring and into the summer for sure.
Wow. And we'll probably be wearing masks for the foreseeable future, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I think Fauci actually said that we'll be wearing masks into 2022 because it all depends, A, how fast the vaccine rolls out, and B, how many people are hesitant to take the vaccine. So that will all take time before we get enough vaccinations and immunity built up that we actually have protection for enough people that we don't have to wear masks anymore.
Right.
So we're in this for the long haul, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. And, you know, I'm an older person, and I'm thinking this might go on for the rest of my life. It's kind of frightening. And the thing is, we don't know much about this virus. We need to go back to the fact that it is a novel virus. It appeared at the end of 2019, thus the name COVID-19. Today, though, Dr. Ding, you tweeted out about a new study, new research that shows a new strain of this virus. You said new study that shows the newer D614G strain.
Yes.
What is this about?
It's not like completely new.
Yeah.
But what the controversy is that this new strain, which emerged like around April and has since taken over the world, is it actually more infectious than the original strain that started in Wuhan? And the new research shows that yes, it is. It's more infectious. Okay. It replicates faster. It's more robust, a survivor of a virus strain. And basically they proved that in mice, hamsters, and ferrets. And this is why in certain ways the virus is spread so robustly, because it survives pretty well and it's pretty efficient, darn efficient in being infectious. So, you know, this virus, if it wasn't so robust, it would not have taken over the world, right?
Right.
So the fact that now we know that the virus is, you know, we have a more dangerous one than we originally had in January, February, it's only means that we need to be extra more careful.
So why do some people get deathly ill? Literally, they die. Some are in the hospital for months and months and months. Some have, long haulers who have symptoms that just don't let up and they keep getting worse. And then there's people like, I hate to say it, the Trump family, who are in and out. They're 3 days and they're done. Why?
There's a lot of risk factors. Uh-huh. You know, there are, for example, you know, diabetes, heart disease, a lot of other immune diseases that makes you very, very susceptible. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of America is obese or diabetic.
Yep.
So that automatically explains a lot. But, you know, we do know that there's definitely like anywhere from 10 or 15% of people who have no chronic conditions whatsoever. And they're not old and they still suffer.
Yeah.
And those are the mystery patients. And we're still trying to understand this virus. It's incredibly insidious as we've seen. But although I wouldn't say that Trump is somehow miraculously gotten better because he's so great. He got a synthetic 8 grams, you know, 8,000 milligrams of a synthetic antibody cocktail by Regeneron. which basically is like synthetic antibodies to fight the virus. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that actually suppresses your own body's ability to make antibodies and being immune. So actually, he actually might make himself worse off if he thinks he's completely immune. So
the pace again, of
most people can't access that drug. So
right.
It's incredibly frustrating.
No, only he and Mike Lee and Lindsey Graham apparently got. Oh, and they're giving it to Mike Pence as a prophylactic because he's been exposed. The bottom line is we can't get that. It's not approved mm-hmm. for general use. So there's that. So all right. So here we are, Dr. Ding, talking to the people. Talk to Trump supporters who say, well, you know, he's okay, and he says we're fine, and we're just gonna keep going. We need to open up the economy. We need to get back to work. What do you say to those people?
Well, I hope everyone can get back to work, but the issue is, you know, things like bars and restaurants are just too gosh darn dangerous mm-hmm. because they're indoors, they're naturally unmasked in order to eat and drink, and they tend to be very loud and tend to be super spreading events. And so, you know, if you open them, you're actually going to prolong the virus and pandemic. Mm-hmm. That's the honest truth. So, you know, the best way for the economy and people to recover is by pursuing zero COVID strategy. Not to keep it on like a simmer, because you'll still get burnt, right? You mm-hmm. really need to put out the fire, period. And only then will people go back to work, businesses return to normal, people having conferences and conventions. Because my analogy is, look, if you have a Jurassic Park, but you still have velociraptors roaming around, but yet you say, hey, the park is empty for tourists, right. No one's going to come visit. Right. Or not enough people will ever come to bring business back to normal. And so that's why we need to actually stamp out the virus, stamp out the velociraptors, if we truly want business to return to normal.
Gotcha. Let me ask you one last question, and this is on a personal level. Tuesday's election day. My birthday is Wednesday. I turn 61. Thank you. I hope so. Please, let's make it a happy one. Right? But my daughter turned 21, stuck at home with her parents in isolation. I finally, last month, she was offered a job. I said, go, take it. She's being careful. She's wearing a mask, but she's moved out. It's killing me. I can't see my kid. She wants to come over for my birthday and at least see me. When she does come, she's only been here twice since she left. We wear masks. We wear face shields. We wear gloves. We don't hug, which kills me. Are we doing the right thing? Should I see her for my birthday, or should we just give it a
pass? I think we should obviously be very careful in terms of your personal risk factors. And
by the way, I'm a lung cancer survivor.
Depends on where she has worked.
Right.
But also that, you know, you could also get a test. She could also get a test. Now, tests aren't perfect, but a negative test is more informative than having no test. And then distance, but assume that it's not a perfect test and still distance yourself. Meet outside somewhere or on a patio deck
right,
or something
like
that.
Which is what we did. She doesn't come in the house.
Right. And still, you know, keep a couple feet distance. You know, keep your seats separated a little bit. I think that is much better than not seeing you at all.
Yes.
So I think just taking these precautions, assume that each step you do is not foolproof, but if you add them up together, right, distancing, masks, outdoors, maybe get a test before she visits, all these together adds up into like this, like a fortress of risk, so that, you know, you're protected from the virus. Right. If you have this multi-layered castle strategy.
Right. And as a lung cancer survivor, missing most of my left lung, I'm not being overly cautious. I'm doing what I need to do, aren't I?
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good idea. I'm missing part of my right lung too.
Are you?
So I empathize with you. Yeah. but I think taking every precaution is absolutely needed. And especially when visiting, you know, even more elderly seniors, I'm not calling you a senior.
I wish I was 65 so I could get Medicare, because I'm worried about losing my health insurance now that
I know we all are, especially with the pre-existing conditions protection on the line potentially. So altogether, look, this virus is a darn tricky sucker. Mm-hmm. And you have to not just take one single approach with it. You can't just test out of it and not wear a mask, right? You have to assume a test is not perfect, wear a mask, distance, ventilate, avoid risky situations, and all together, just work together. Because even if you do it and your neighbors don't, they will keep spreading the virus,
right?
Potentially. And this is why, you know, social cohesion and collective action is so important. And that's why some countries in South Korea and Japan have done so well, in Taiwan, because the society has understood collective action is needed to protect all of us. Well, the hyper-individualistic society of America, you can't tell me what to do, actually hurts us in the long run.
I hear you. Oh, boy. Dr. Eric Ding is his Twitter handle. Follow him right now. Your information is so invaluable. I can't thank you enough. And I can't thank you enough for your time today. Thank you. This has been great. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Stay safe. Happy birthday.
Thank you so much. Dr. Eric Ding is how you find him. Follow him on Twitter. I'm telling you, his Twitter feed is great because it's filled with real information from an actual scientist, a doctor who's an epidemiologist, who this is what he does. Unlike Scott Atlas, who Donald Trump tapped because he saw him on Fox. By the way, Dr. Atlas, who's Trump's key advisor now when it comes to COVID, is a radiologist. A radiologist who reads x-rays. That's what a radiologist does. He's got no training in this field. He is not an expert by any means. The reason Donald Trump tapped him to be his guy, to push Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx aside, is because he's parroting the same bullshit that Trump says. So there you go. That it is just astounding. Absolutely astounding. So, yes, he's great. And I see a lot of people in the chat room agreeing with me. Last night in my insomniatic state, I was going through, you know, my Twitter feed to see the people that I follow, to see who would be a good person to have on. And then I realized that Dr. Eric followed me. So I sent him a direct message. He replied to me somewhere around, 1:30 in the morning. And so this all just came together today. We taped that a couple of hours ago because he's obviously a busy guy. But it's nice having an expert who deals in facts telling us what's going on. So now we might bring us, I love this, John Pelosi in the chat room says, Atlas is worse than Dr. Spaceman from 30 Rock. You're right, Dr. Spaceman, spelled like spaceman, in case you were wondering. We are going to move on because the other big issue today, obviously, aside from the election, is what happened in the Supreme Court, how the Republicans stole yet another seat. And I contend they stole all three because Anthony Kennedy was not ready to retire. There was some kind of backroom deal cut there to get him out and get Brett Kavanaugh in. And I believe, and I don't have the facts in front of me, so don't hold me to this, but it's something along the lines of Kennedy's son got some kind of a favor from somebody in the Trump administration for Kennedy to step aside. I think it's something, it's been a while since, Kennedy retired and I, put it out of sight, out of mind. But there was something fishy there. And of course, Antonin Scalia's seat that Mitch McConnell and his cronies held open for almost a year, denying Obama the right to appoint a Supreme Court justice in his term. The double standard is just disgusting. So there's a lot. I have a lot of questions about Amy Coney Barrett, about about the whole process by which she came into power. And I'm actually making sure. So, who my legal expert is. My friend Lisa Graves has the biggest bona fides of anybody that I know. So what happened is, so the current administration, as you know, peddles lies and gaslighting. And so, again, I wanted to dispel some of these rumors to counter the lies that Trump tells on a regular basis. So with the travesty that is Amy Phoney Barrett pushed through the confirmation process, and to add insult to injury, to fill the seat of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I mean, you take this virtue, this paragon of virtue, this brilliant woman, and you replace her with this zealot, with this person with extreme beliefs. The whole thing is just astounding. So Mitch McConnell, while we're fighting through this pandemic, while millions of Americans are being evicted and hundreds of thousands, we're almost at 250,000 Americans who've lost their lives to this virus already because of the mishandling of it by this administration. Mitch McConnell made a decision that instead of dealing with trying to get some round of relief for American citizens who are suffering, that he would instead ignore that, push it off to the side, because who cares about those peon people? Instead, we're going to ram through this unqualified Supreme Court justice. So I wanted to explore our options. So I did. I called on Lisa Graves. And the reason, again, her bona fides are unimpeachable. She's a former chief counsel to the Senate Judiciary Committee on Nominations. She's a former deputy assistant attorney general. And on and on it goes. So she knows her shit. And let's see, I've got more. She sits. All right. She is now the founder. I'm vamping until she enters the Zoom room. She's supposed to be here any minute now. Lisa Graves now is the founder and executive director and editor in chief of True North Research. They're at truenorthresearch.org. She also sits on the board of the Center for Media and Democracy, where she helmed many research projects, including Alec Exposed, Koch Docs, and a lot of others. I mean, she blew the whistle on the Koch brothers, on Alec. She brought them into the general lexicon. That was Lisa's doing. She, as I mentioned, she served as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Legal Policy at the U.S. Department of Justice in the Clinton administration. She was Chief Counsel for Nominations for Senator Patrick Leahy on the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee. She was Deputy Attorney General working under Janet Reno. She's run the gamut, so she knows her shit. And she was an adjunct law professor at George Washington University. It goes on and on. You get the idea. So I wanted to talk to her about, the travesty that is Amy Coney Barrett at the Supreme Court. All right. I don't see her yet. So I'll tell you what we'll do is I have another little funny song that I'll share with you while I try to raise Lisa Graves and get her on so I can ask her these burning questions I have for her. This is the latest one from Founder Sing, and it comes at a time when Bruce Springsteen has a new album out. So take it away, Founder Sing. And Bruce?
Chris Gibbs from Western Ohio, and I'm a farmer. Now, I voted for Trump, but I also spoke out about the disastrous trade policies he forced upon American agriculture through punitive tariffs against our trading partners. In Trump's Republican discussion, no dissent, no vetting of policy, and that's what you get when you let hate-filled populists take over a party. I'll vote Biden in the fall. Now I'm on my knees.
that we were safe. She died alone, couldn't kiss her face. Believe the doctors and what science says. I had to learn the hard way what truth is now.
When he dragged off to the penitentiary and we restore our nation's sanity, then 10 years looking back at now, we'll be amazed we felt so far down. Come in the USA, we've been scorned in the USA. Yes, dawn of the USA, gonna vote him out and make him pay. Come in the USA, we've been scorned in the USA. Yes,
yes, Founder Singh with the Cond in the USA. Welcome back. I'm Nicole Sandler. And I'm thrilled to be joined by Lisa Graves. But for some reason, Lisa, I bring you up and I know why. Hold on. Okay, the echo is gone. Lisa, you there?
I am, Nicole. Thank you so much, my little buzzer, for meeting up with you. It didn't go off, but I'm so glad to be on your show.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you here because, you know, I've got all these questions about what happened with the Supreme Court, and you're the best person that I can think of to talk to because you're you, and you know your shit, and you're honest, and you tell it like it is, and you've done so much amazing work. So Lisa Graves, and I already went through the whole intro, so people know who you are. They can find you on Twitter at @TheLisaGraves, and they should check out TrueNorthResearch.org to see the work that you're doing now. But there's so many questions about Amy Coney Barrett. Was there anything that the Democrats could have done to stop this, to stop her confirmation?
Well, I think it's quite clear that the United States Senate is rigged.
Yeah.
Senator McConnell has helped rig that system. Senator Lindsey Graham has helped rig that system in the Senate Judiciary Committee. And there were very few options under these circumstances to stop this nomination from going forward. Unfortunately, even though I think that she should not have been confirmed, I think her tenure on the court will be a disaster for the American people in terms of how extreme her views are, despite the very sort of humble facade that was put forward. She has an agenda, I think, that will dramatically harm people's rights in a lot of different issues.
This is why my stomach is in knots right now. So I got a message, a text from a listener, Pam, in San Bernardino, California, who wrote to me, "Nicole, don't despair. When we reclaim all three branches, if she's confirmed, the last three can be removed from the Supreme Court." And I wrote back, I don't think that's the case. And she said, ask Lisa, she'll confirm it. So I'm asking you, Lisa.
I appreciate her confidence in my ability to confirm it. I regret that I cannot confirm it. However, I think that it's quite clear that the courts have been packed by this president and by the GOP with many people who are really unfit for these jobs. Some of them are very young. And very inexperienced and chosen basically for their ideological purity, not for their fairness. The essence of being a judge or having a reason we have courts or we trust courts to decide matters of dispute is because they're supposed to be fair. I think there are a lot of options that people should be considering, that members of Congress should be considering to deal with this packing. One of the facts that I think people don't realize, and I can say this for myself in the last 50 years in my lifetime, there have been now 16 appointees of Republican presidents confirmed to the United States Supreme Court and 4 appointees of Democratic presidents.
Wow.
So it literally has been 16-4. And some of those have been stolen, those seats. That's the seat that was the seat that President Obama nominated Merrick Garland to in 2016 that was blocked. And this seat, where Ruth Bader Ginsburg died on the eve of a presidential election. And this president has gone forward with a nomination, the first nomination in well over 100 years that has been only on a party line vote.
Yep.
Narrowly confirmed of someone who people have extreme reservations about being fair. And in fact, the real story is She was chosen precisely for the opposite reason, not because she'll be fair, but because the people who put her on the list, like Leonard Leo, who is Trump's sort of judge whisperer, a guy who's gotten very rich advising the president on judicial nominations, have chosen her because they think that she will help reverse our rights, reverse our precedents, legal precedents, which is the opposite of a fair judge. And so there are options for some of the justices, depending on the circumstances, like with Justice Kavanaugh.
Yes.
As I noted before, he lied under oath to the United States Senate Judiciary Committee about substantial, serious matters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he should be impeached. So that could be an option, theoretically.
Okay.
It depends on the circumstances.
Right. Now, there's I have another question about Justice Kavanaugh, because he stepped in it this week. On Monday, before Barrett took her seat, hate saying that, they ruled 5-3, because there were only 8 justices at the moment, to strike down a federal court's ruling that in Wisconsin, where you live, Lisa Graves, the state of Wisconsin, the federal court had ruled that the state had to count absentee ballots that were postmarked through November 3rd, Election Day. Well, let me read to you how the Nation wrote what happened. The 5 justices had various rationales for their intervention, which deviated from a stance the High Court took regarding Wisconsin's April 7th election. But Kavanaugh explicitly channeled the false narrative of Trump and his toadies, who have argued that mail-in votes that are postmarked on November 3rd, or even before that date, but arrive afterward, would somehow wrongly reverse the Election Day will of the voters. And so Kavanaugh wrote this in, he wrote a concurrence to the 5-3 opinion, in which he brought up some of this crap that is just wrong on every level. This is bad, isn't it?
Well, Brett Kavanaugh is really a political operative who has been given a lifetime job on our court, a position that he doesn't deserve, and that he has already basically used to advance his personal agenda, despite his claims to the Judiciary Committee about his supposed willingness to follow precedent. So he's a liar.
Yes.
And I've documented that he is, in fact, a liar. He's a liar, and in my view, a perjurer, not just an ordinary liar, but someone willing to lie under oath. So I'm not surprised at all. What I am surprised about in some way is that despite the terrible decision in Bush v. Gore, which, you know, robbed Al Gore and millions of Americans of the president who actually was chosen by them, that decision was purportedly at the time supposed to be a non-precedent, a case that, you know, would never be citable as precedent. It was decided by a 5-4 majority of the Republican appointees, citing its issuing a ruling that favored the Republican presidential candidate. And Brett Kavanaugh was a lawyer in that case. And so also, by the way, was Amy Coney Barrett, a lawyer involved in that case.
So was John Roberts, right?
And so was John Roberts. And,
yep.
And also John Roberts was advising Jeb Bush, the then governor of Florida. So that is an issue. And also, it's a very narrow conception of voting rights or voter intent.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that if someone has mailed their ballot, their intent is to vote in that election.
Yes.
Like, it's not even, it's almost like a punchline of a bad joke,
right,
to suggest that that's not their intent. But that's precisely the type of, in my view, hack that Brett Kavanaugh is. And to have someone like that in a position of such power on the U.S. Supreme Court is manifestly unjust. It's a seat that he should not have. And I think he ultimately should not be allowed to be retained in that position.
Right.
I don't know whether that will be a direction that members of Congress want to go. I think they have other options for examining the court, including the fact that this court has 9 members, but that's not set by the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
It could be any number. I think it should be 15, actually, by the way, if you look at the caseload of the court. This court has nearly 8,000 appeals a year. It only issues 80 opinions a year. Back in 1960 and 50 and 70, it was issuing like 140, 150
wow.
opinions a year
wow.
With typewriters, not even with computers, and with fewer clerks.
Uh-huh.
So it's taking fewer cases, doing less work when there's more work to be done. And in addition, under President Reagan in 1988, he pushed through a change in the court's jurisdiction. So it has almost no mandatory cases. Most courts have mandatory cases. A case comes to them, they have to hear it.
Right.
The Supreme Court's caseload is entirely discretionary. And what that means is that 4 of the 9 justices on that court can decide any case they want to take.
Right.
And they are taking cases to destroy our rights. That's Citizens United case. That's the Shelby County case on voting rights. That's the case that was on redistricting, saying judges couldn't engage in redistricting. And it's the caseload that they've chosen for this term. So we should not have these, in many cases, very young, very political operatives or, ideologues sitting in a position where they get to pick and choose which of our rights they want to destroy or uphold. And that's unfortunately what we're seeing with this Supreme Court. It really has behaved in a way, I think, that makes it hard for people to have confidence that it will be fair. And the addition of Amy Coney Barrett and this illegitimate process that has confirmed her only adds to the illegitimacy of this court and its effort to raise up corporate rights and strike down the rights of people in America, rights that we rely upon, including Roe v. Wade, but so many other rights that are at stake with this court trying to change the course of our legal history and our future.
Right. You know, there, so many people, they're talking about, oh, the Democrats, now they're going to pack the courts. I want to get the vernacular straight with you, Lisa. What the Republicans have done over the past 4 years is pack the courts. Mitch McConnell held about 200 judicial appointments open, would not bring Obama's nominees up for a vote to hold them open with the hopes that there would be a Republican president and they could do exactly what they did. They pushed through 220 judicial appointments in the last 4 years and more, apparently, they're still trying to do. What the Democrats or what we're talking about doing, Joe Biden said he'll empower a commission to study it, is talk about increasing the number of justices on the court. That's not packing, is it?
No, and in fact, there are a number of options, including expanding the court, expanding other courts, changing, having like term limits, basically. There are a number of options, but the fact is that the Republicans have attempted to capture the courts, and they've attempted to do so because, as Leonard Leo described in a closed-door speech to funders and allies, they want the court to reverse basically a century of precedent. He said that we stand at the precipice of a revival, in his view, his words, of the, quote, structural constitution, this invention of a term that they have created, that no one alive today has seen the type of revolution that's about to unfurl by this court. Those are his words paraphrased from a Washington Post article from last May about Leonard Leo. So I take them at their word. And that is the essence of the packing, the capturing of the courts that they've done.
Yep.
And that's one of the reasons why I was so grateful for the work of Senator Sheldon Whitehouse to shine a light on the dark money that's been swirling around this court.
Most definitely. Has a Supreme Court justice ever been impeached?
There have been impeachments of Supreme Court justices and lower court justices. In fact, if you look at the impeachment clause history in the United States, of all the federal officers who could be subject to impeachment, the officers who have been most often impeached have been judges.
Interesting. Have justices been removed from the bench?
Yes, justices have been removed from the bench for significant crimes and misdemeanors. But it's also the case that I think that we should be thinking broadly about what does it mean to have fair courts? Do we have courts that look like us? Is this court in any sense representative, even though it's not a representative body? But does it look like America?
Not at all.
Does it reflect our diversity? Does it reflect the diversity of view, diversity of faith, or philosophy? No, it does not. It's been stacked and packed by Leonard Leo, who, by the way, took a pay cut from his day job at the Federalist Society in 2018 to help push Kavanaugh through, $100,000 compensation cut. But that year, he was able to pay off his mortgage on his home in outside Virginia and buy a $3.3 million mansion on the coast of Maine. So he appears to be getting quite rich in this volunteer role of aiding Trump's appointment process, and he's created a part of a bunch of front groups that are trying to literally capture our court. So we have a right as a people to respond to that and to secure courts that are fair and not captured by Leonard Leo and his cabal.
Definitely. Hey, Lisa Graves is our guest. We're going to say goodbye to the Progressive Voices Network because the hour is over. But Lisa, I got about two more questions for you. So if you just stick around, we'll keep going. We'll do a little bit of overtime today. So bye, Progressive Voices. We'll see you tomorrow. Now back to us. Okay. So, back to Kavanaugh for a second. Kavanaugh, he had debts, all kinds of debts when he was nominated, and they all of a sudden disappeared. Not only did he lie under oath, but there's a lot of questions surrounding who paid off his debts. So many things. This is all fodder for impeachment, right? I mean, do you think that the Democrats have the guts to follow up on this?
Well, I think there's so much about Kavanaugh that's very troubling. You know, certainly this appearance of going from, you know, substantial debt to no debt with no observable increase in income would be a red flag for any reasonable person.
You would think.
And there's not been sufficient public disclosure to explain how that happened. There have been suggestions that there's an exception in the rules for ethics that you can take gifts from your friends. But who are those friends? And I ask because one of the things that's happened on this court that's also really unsavory and disturbing is that Justice Clarence Thomas, sometime after he became a judge on the D.C. Circuit, and since he's been on the Supreme Court now for coming in on 30 years almost,
yeah. Oh, God.
He became friends with a billionaire named Harlan Crow. So now he gets to go ride on Harlan Crow's yacht, basically, and that's, quote, a gift from a friend.
Oh, my.
He flies around the world and in the United States on Harlan Crow's private debts, and that's private jets, pardon me, and that's like supposedly a gift from a friend. So what are these gifts from friends? So
yes.
I think that should be explored.
As should his wife, who has been a lobbyist. In fact, it was over 10 years ago now when the Affordable Care Act was being written in the Senate and working its way through committees. And Ginny Thomas was lobbying against it while her husband sat on the Supreme Court to rule on it. That's got to be a conflict of interest. And oh, by the way, the hundreds of thousands of dollars she took in for her role as a lobbyist on the Affordable Care Act were somehow never put on their financial disclosure forms.
I think there's a lot of troubling things in the financial sort of history or description of the activities of Justice Thomas and his wife, Jenny. Mm-hmm. You know, she also took a job in the Bush transition as Bush v. Gore came down in favor of Bush, with Thomas writing in favor, you know, voting in favor of Bush. Mm-hmm. She's been in the thick of a lot of these controversial political issues at the White House, this White House, pushing policy, helping orchestrate various, you know, clearly partisan political operations. And I think it's very unseemly as well and very troubling. I also think that, you know, there's a lot of materials. There were a lot of materials that were not provided to the United States Senate that they were entitled to as part of the nomination for Brett Kavanaugh. Those have been withheld, I think, totally inappropriately by Brett Kavanaugh's right-hand man, who is operating the clearance process for the archives for the Bush administration. Those materials should be provided to Congress. I also think, you know, obviously there was more information that came out around Brett Kavanaugh's behavior, his treatment of women, that was basically whitewashed by a very short-circuited FBI review that was narrowly directed by this president to only, you know, only question X, you know, this person, but not that person. There were many people who were willing to speak under oath to Congress and to the FBI, but they were not interviewed by the majority Republicans that controlled that committee or by the FBI that was being subject to these directives by this president. So I actually think there's a lot there that should be investigated, that could be investigated with regard to Brett Kavanaugh. I think Clarence Thomas has had an ethical cloud over him for a long time. And Jenny Thomas is really it's central to a lot of these partisan political activities that are coordinated with this White House.
Yep.
I think that should be fully examined. And I think that obviously that the point I made before about the witnesses who wanted to come forward to talk about how Brett Kavanaugh was lying about his treatment of women in the aftermath of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford's testimony, that should be fully examined. And someone like that is simply unfit and unworthy of a lifetime position of trust on the nation's highest court.
I couldn't agree more. So then last question for you, Lisa Graves. With the new Congress coming in January, hopefully it's looking pretty good that the Democrats will take control of the Senate. That would put Dianne Feinstein in place to be chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I don't see her following up on any of this. Is she the right person for that role? And if not, who would you choose?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, I have seen with these committees, because she was on the Intelligence Committee as well as the Judiciary mm-hmm. Committee. And there are times in which members choose one committee for chairmanship over another committee. And so it's not, even though she's obviously the most senior member of that committee in the current kind of iteration of it, yeah. although she's actually not, I mean, I think Senator Leahy may be the most senior member of that committee, actually, my former boss.
Right.
But I don't think that it's decided at all who will be the committee chairs in a new Congress. There may be a lot of factors about preference, you know, by a member where he or she would like to serve in this coming term. But also, I think, you know, the people of California, I think, have very strong views about protecting our rights, about having a court that will not strike down the ability of Congress to mitigate climate change, the climate changes that are underway and that have really dried out the forests of California and have led to this extraordinary conflagration, literally conflagration,
yeah.
That has taken so many lives and so much property and harmed so much wildlife in the state. And I think, you know, I'm concerned that this Supreme Court, with how much money Charles Koch has invested in trying to get the justices, Leonard Leo, picked for Trump on the court, that it will try to use its power to say that Congress doesn't have any power yeah. over regulating carbon. That's certainly the argument that the Koch funded groups have made. And that's, you know, that's unacceptable as a, you know, modern society. If that happens for a court like this, with this packed court, this captured court, to basically issue a judicial fiat that we, the people of America, cannot have representatives regulate carbon in order to save our lives and save our planet. So the stakes really are enormous. They're both significant for our democracy in terms of the election cases, whether Barrett sits on a Trump appeal in this election or not, whether she recuses, which she has refused to commit to do. But beyond this next month, with the Affordable Care Act case, the potential election cases, there's actually a set of cases coming to the court that Leonard Leo's groups and allies have moved, which challenge those very principles, including things like, can agencies create rules? Or is that an improper delegation of legislative authority to a federal agency? It's mind-blowing, the radicalism, the reaction that this reactionary agenda is putting forward. So we have a lot of work to do to reclaim our courts and to establish truly fair courts for the people.
Oh, without a doubt. And Lisa Graves, I'm so glad that you're there to help us understand what's going on and what is possible, what we can do, what can be done. Lisa Graves is the founder and executive director and editor-in-chief of True North Research. Find them at truenorthresearch.org. You can find her on the Twitters at @TheLisaGraves. You can also find her on Facebook. I say it all the time, but you're awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us and answering my questions.
You're wonderful, Nicole. I adore you, my friend. Thank you so much for having me on.
You too. Well, thank you. All right. You know, 6 more days. Keep our fingers crossed and go Wisconsin. How are things going in Wisconsin right now?
I don't know. You know, the polling is, I polling is up, polling is down. Yeah. You never know. Everyone's got to vote and insist that their vote be counted. That's what our obligation is over the next week. Vote and make sure your vote gets counted.
Most definitely. Thank you so much, Lisa. We'll talk
Thanks.
Soon. All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Lisa Graves, she's just the best. I am so honored that she comes on here and she's my friend. All right. With that, we are done for the day. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. And then Friday, by the way, there's a new movie on HBO called 537 Votes by the director Billy Corbin. He will be our guest on Friday. So go to HBO and watch the movie so you'll be in on the know with us. All right. I'll see you then. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.